Hi, this is Lauren Baker, and welcome to the inaugural episode of my first podcast ever, Search and Deploy. The topic matter of Search and Deploy, and basically the format is that there's a lot of search news going on in the world, and there's a lot of blogs writing about search, but that's all fine and dandy. What I want to talk about is how to actually utilize what's being written and what's being said out there in the market and deploy it into your marketing strategies. So with each episode, we're going to start off with a monologue done by yours truly, and then I'm going to bring in a special guest. So that's it for the monologue today. And my first guest ever to Search and Deploy is none other than John Henshaw, the founder of Raven Tools. So, John, welcome to Search and Deploy.
Thank you. I mean, just because I'm from Nashville doesn't mean you have to say it so slowly.
Well, it's like it's supposed to be like a radio show, right? Oh, yeah, okay. I don't know. Like, I'm really self-conscious about my voice.
I feel like in your monologue that you should have then said Lauren Baker.
Oh, well, you know, being that you're from Kentucky.
No, Tennessee. It's all the same.
John. I was trying to do get my Johnny Cash thing going on there. So, hey, welcome to the show, John. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, when I've been getting ready for this show, like, you know, I was going to listen to a bunch of other business podcasts, but I thought to myself, hey, you know, when I started Search Engine Journal back in the day, I didn't go look at a bunch of other search blogs because they just didn't exist, and it worked, right? So I didn't listen to any business podcasts getting ready for this. What I did is I watched a bunch of old episodes of like Letterman and Carson and stuff like that, because like I think that format is just what people use anyway, and if it worked for them, it should work for us, right?
Yeah, I think you have the exact same approach that I have towards everything. Same way I approached Raven and everything else. I'm the type of person where somebody comes up and goes, "Have you read this book and that book and that book on how to do such and such?" And I'm like, "No." And it's like, "Man, it really has helped me with my business." And I'm like, "What do you do?" "I just make a lot of mistakes."
Exactly.
Dive into it.
And then one day maybe write a book about that, or maybe we can together. But
fail quickly, and then eventually you're going to get something right, I swear.
Well, like when I was done with college, right, I swore that I was never going to read a nonfiction book again, just because I loaded up on them. And what I typically find is that most of the good stuff from the business books is published on Inc. and Forbes and stuff like that anyway, as an attempt to market the book. So I just digest things really. Like I have a really, really my attention is so short, mostly because of watching funny clips on YouTube all day.
Of course. Well, and it's funny too, because I would say that the two of us probably read the equivalent of many, many books a year, simply from all the things that we read online. Because, you know, really where I'm getting the most inspiration, where I'm learning things that are really fairly new and things that people aren't talking about, come from people I know and people I follow. So, you know, the amount of things I read every day from on blogs and different places of people I really respect, like AJ Cohn or, you know, those type of people.
Yeah.
Those kind of replace the need for sort of what people are doing that's working. You know?
Yep. Oh, and also, like, you know, by the time a book is published, usually a lot of that information isn't as relevant as it could be. And a lot of the folks that I do read online that have published very good books in their own right typically utilize their blog and social media to kind of test that content before publishing it anyway. Right. So I already feel like I've read it. Hey, but let's get right into it. Not that we haven't already.
Well, I was gonna say there's one other thing, which is neither of us can read. We're talking about blogs that are mostly made up of pictures.
That's why.
And so Tumblr's is basically I make up my daily reading.
That's why we're doing a podcast.
Exactly, because we can't read.
I can't write either. Like I've gotten to the point where I just don't want to write anymore. Like two emails or whatever.
It hurts my hand.
Yeah. God bless Siri.
Oh, but anyways, you were saying about starting the podcast. What was that?
I'm off track now, but well,
I've done my job.
Let's let you introduce yourself.
Okay, all right.
Tell the audience of Search and Deploy which is a Rainmaker.fm production. A little bit more about yourself.
Okay. Well, like you said, my name is John Henshaw.
I just and speak slow, John. Forgive me.
No, I know. I know. It's okay. So I have been doing web design, internet marketing stuffs for many, many years. I guess I got started around 96 or something like that. I am most well known, if anybody does know me, from being one of the co-founders of Raven, which is an internet marketing platform that's mainly used by agencies and in-house marketing departments for their reporting. So we have a really great reporting engine. That's the real kind of main thrust. I would say the second biggest reason people use us because of our automated site auditor, which we made a couple years ago, which we're actually doing a whole lot of work on right now and improving that. And then we have a bunch of other tools. You know, we originally got started as just an SEO tool set, which was basically an app for link builders. And we had one of the first automated web-based rank trackers and a whole link management system. But we pretty much have kind of diversified over several years. And now we're really just focused on being and continuing to become the best reporting platform.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I do like about your reporting set is basically that it's browser-based and mobile-friendly, which I liked a lot when you rolled that out, which kind of bridges into a lot of what we're going to talk about later. But it seems like you guys have really been focusing not only on, you know, your feature set, but also the user experience at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, this is probably the first time I think I've even said this publicly anywhere. Starting in this past January, we made a dramatic shift in how we were going to approach the product and develop the product and interact with our customers. And we have shifted over to something called Lean Startup. Mm-hmm. And Lean Startup is a pretty amazing approach to how you do product development. And there are basically two different phases that a company can be in. It can be a company that truly is just starting up, and then the phase that we're in, where we actually have a product with a lot of real customers and paying customers. We have a proven product. And so there is a methodology to how you improve upon that. And a lot of that has to do with UX. In fact, I would say that the core part of that and the part that we're growing in internally is our UX department and being in contact with our customers and even non-customers and finding out what works best for them, what they use and what they don't use. And what that means is that over time, you end up trimming out the things that people really don't need and don't use and enhancing the things that they really do like and use so that it becomes the best product and it's not as overwhelming. You know, one of the things that a lot of new users who come into Raven today experience is like, wow, there's so many things to do. I feel a little overwhelmed. The idea of what the product should become with this approach is that a year from now, you know, or maybe a little longer, Raven's going to look a lot different. It's going to be more refined. It's going to be a lot simpler to use. It's actually going to help people do the things they need to do. And it will most likely have less choices. It'll have less things that people don't need. And right. And the things they do need will just be better. And so that's kind of where we're taking it now.
Very cool. You know, that's fairly relevant to, well, first of all, a couple things. Like, I've, you know, I'm not a very productive or organized person by any means, but I have been.
We're like brothers, man. Brothers from another mother.
Yeah. But I have been totally like checking out stuff about like productivity hacking and growth hacking recently. And just like the one common denominator, like whatever you want to call it, is just, it's very easy to take a project that you're passionate about and try to be everything for everyone. Yeah. When at the end of the day, you're really doing too much for a small component of your market base, right? And not really addressing the need on the grand scale. So,
well, we've been around for 8 years plus. Mm-hmm. And when we started, our main customers were advanced SEO agency types. I mean, that's right. who they were. And over the years, we've done a huge shift to, and so has the industry itself. There's been a huge shift towards marketing agencies in general now doing the things that they never did, as far as SEO and social and so on. You have less experts who are in need of these particular resources. And so we've had to and we're still in the process of making a big shift towards providing more help and making things easier to do, because the majority of our customers and potential customers are non-experts.
Yeah.
They have been given this task, and they're intelligent people, and they're learning from reading books and going to conferences and through practice. But they actually today, the big shift has been, they need tools that are going to give them insights. They need tools that are going to hold their hands just a little bit, but do things that are inefficient for them.
Right.
And basically help them do their job and help them do their job better. And that's a big shift I've seen. And then you had mentioned that, you try to do all these things. That's the other part where, we're counting on the lean startup approach to kind of get us out of that hole we kind of put ourselves into, which is we tried to be all things. Well, we're going to be kind of pulling back from that and not being all things to everybody, and instead approaching the things that people use the most, the real reasons why most of our customers pay us money, and making those things better and work better.
Mm-hmm. And an analogy I use, well, not really an analogy, but just like a comparison I use a lot of the time too, is like, it's like it used to be the SEO person was sitting in a cubicle at the end of the office or whatever, in the dark, doing their own magic stuff and running affiliate programs and on the side or whatever. And just like the person that no one in marketing really talked to and no one in IT really had much respect for. But now that kind of hidden cubicle person is becoming more of a center into the overall digital marketing fold, right?
So, I mean, that person's becoming a director. If you have somebody who, like what you're saying, is kind of a growth hacker type person who actually has done all the things, they may not be the best at all the things, but they know how to do all the things. They know what works.
Yep.
They're on top of it. That ends up being somebody who ends up directing a team today.
Exactly.
As opposed to sitting in the dark, running their affiliate sites.
Yeah, exactly. And, the way a lot of things have worked too over the past couple of years, especially with the opportunities that social and everything else brings, is that that's important to SEO. SEO is important to social. Content supports everything. So it kind of brings it all together. So kudos for putting together a suite to be able to not only monitor all of that, but report efficiently on it.
Thanks.
So let's get into the news. So, one of the biggest trends that, or some of the biggest signals that we've been seeing coming from the camp at Google over the past couple of years, is that mobile and things like mobile friendliness, site speed, and other, obvious
SSL.
Obvious components of the user experience really have becoming more important in search. And then today, the Google Webmaster Tools team announced that the mobile friendliness will officially become a ranking factor on April 21st, which I'm going to coin like doomsday right now for a lot of folks out there. And luckily this podcast will be published before then. But, I don't know, like I work on some accounts right now where mobile traffic, it's not only the majority of the traffic on some sites, but it's an overwhelming majority, like especially in the EDU space. Work on a .edu site right now where we're talking 65 to 67% of all traffic to the property is mobile. And we're seeing that same number with search referrals. Google has finally come out and said, hey, this is going to become a component. It's not just forecasting, or it's not just us doing SEO soothsaying, but they are going to adjust the algorithm to address mobile friendliness. And then yesterday, in the same fashion that Google introduced mobile friendly labeling in the SERPs, they started testing the labeling of slow serving sites or sites with different page speed issues, which we've all known has been a component of rankings. But my theory there is it's just going to become a bigger component, and it's such an underlying component to overall mobile friendliness in the long run. So what are your thoughts on that? You really noticed anything previously before this announcement?
I think, you know, what's fascinating is that certainly there is the obvious trend of traffic going to mobile. I mean, it just kind of is. It's a thing, unrelated to anything else. More people are using mobile devices to access their data.
Right.
The thing that interests me the most is the influence that Google has on webmasters. And that's why I kind of like threw in SSL when you're rattling off that list, because, you know, basically Google has this sword or wand, whatever you want to call it, that they can wave around at any moment, and basically, you know, everybody has to jump to some extent. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, all, even though I knew it was coming, and if you were smart about it, you would already be doing a responsive design with your site and that type of thing. It's hard to believe, but it's true that when they actually say it has to be this thing, they move an entire industry.
No, that's amazing.
I mean, if they're going to start doing the mobile label and they're going to start doing the slow label, the amount of power they yield for good or bad is incredible. And so it's kind of weird for, I think, us, because we play two roles in regards to how we use the internet. We are both developers and marketers, but also users. And so typically, if we were to take off our career hat,
right,
and we were just a user, be like, man, this is, you know, this is good. This is a great thing for users because they're trying to improve the user experience. But then there's, of course, an immense amount of grumbling when it comes to looking at it from the marketing or webmaster side.
Yeah. Well, also like a Chicken Little type scenario too, because you have a couple of things going on. Like one, you know, when they announced that HTTPS is a ranking signal, they didn't really say how much of a ranking signal. And it seems like it's only really a ranking signal from a, hey, does your site really need to be secure type scenario, right? If you have forms all over your site, if you have places to put in email, to sign up for a list, things like that, it naturally should be secure anyway. And the last thing, at least from the front-facing Google scenario, is that they should not be serving sites where the user can be giving their secure information out there and publishing their secure information out there where people can grab a hold of it, because it would just be irresponsible on Google's side. But what happened was that same day, not only did you see Twitter and forums and blogs just lighting up with the announcement and how everyone has to secure their site, but you had people prematurely doing it without thinking it through, right?
Right.
And you have companies that are utilizing that as a sales tool, right, to get new business as soon as that goes out. So it kind of leads to a scrambling effect, especially like right now, where there's not necessarily one centralized Google spokesman to kind of like settle down that panic, right?
Right. Well, I would throw out, you know, I talked about how like for the typical user, this all seems great, but then the webmaster and the marketer are sitting there going, okay, so I have to jump, I have to do this particular thing. But to muddy the waters even more, we have to consider what Google's up to in general. You know, right now we're talking about this idea of, you know, it looks very, benign or whatever. I mean, where, okay, so they want to, whatever, with mobile, that's an opportunity for us. I can make my site faster. I can make it mobile and I'll do better in the SERPs. But at the exact same time, this dichotomy exists with what Google's also up to, which is Google is trying to keep you on Google.
Yeah.
And Google is now becoming the ultimate scraper. And if I do pull up a search for something on my phone, I'm not even going to see any organic results. I'm going to see some sort of knowledge, a little snippet article. I'm going to see some ads. And it's like, is it for naught? You know, I mean, in other words, you know, how much do we need to optimize an ad schema or RDFA and make our site super fast so that they can actually scrape it faster so they can then take that content? And I think it was something on a search engine, whatever, it might have been on one of your sites or another site that had reported about 25%. Now as searches have some sort of, you know, knowledge graph or some piece that shows up on top.
Component. And, you know, when I really first started noticing this the most in terms of that, the bypassing the site, but the end user is still getting what they're looking for, right? Whether it is scraped content or whether it's like on the mobile, man, it's like the call to actions are right there, right? You can call the site. You can make a reservation by clicking over to OpenTable. You can get directions. And a lot of the, like, a lot of the time sites just kind of suck for mobile anyway, right? Because even if they are responsive, it's a set it and forget it type scenario of responsive. It's like, oh, our template or our WordPress theme is responsive, therefore it's going to work. Well, the fact is that if your homepage has a buttload of content, by the way, we're not allowed to cuss on this podcast, just to let you know. I don't think you nailed it on any cuss words yet, but
you just said load.
I did say load. I think that's an innuendo that can go in many different ways.
Especially when connected to butt.
Yeah.
But if
your homepage and your internal pages are full of a lot of content where the user's not really finding anything in mobile, then that's a very poor responsive design strategy. And with responsive, you have the ability to pick and choose what's being shown on the mobile device and what's most important. So when I first noticed the whole like bypassing thing really becoming more and more of a problem is when I had a client where their rankings were improving across the board, but they weren't seeing that on traffic wise. And what happened was when you typed in their brand name in Google, you see that little local knowledge graph box that comes up on the iPhone where it tells you the information about the company and then gives you the ability to call directly to go there. And then the very final CTA is to visit the website for more information. So yeah, if it's 25%, it's only growing. And we'll see what happens now.
It seems like that more and more opportunities are being lost if you are even remotely close to a competitive field, you know, they're starting to do stuff with health related things where, again, they take up the top part of that page to send you some sort of aggregated and approved health information on some disease, as opposed to promoting the site. The Google's trying to answer that for you. And so far, you know, the changing landscape I've seen has been, if I'm going to try to optimize for Google, there are two different approaches. One is I'm either going to do less competitive, more long tailish type of sites and content,
right?
Because those are still working for me on my own personal sites. Or for the ones that are more competitive or might be local, have, you know, like you said, there are calls to action right there. I have to play within their ecosystem.
Yeah.
So it's basically I'm either optimizing, which is more old school, or I have to play within their ecosystem and know that my site may not even get any traffic, but at least I put the right components out there so they can know my store hours, my menu, how to contact me, that type of thing. And
that's still good search engine marketing at the end of the day, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what you want the user to find. And honestly, a lot of that information is pretty difficult to find in sites that haven't really addressed that, where a lot of that information is either hidden in an image or it's in a PDF file, or you have to click and click and click to find it. So from a business perspective, in terms of driving users to a restaurant or driving someone to your storefront, they are kind of addressing that opportunity to help the business.
I mean, particularly around local, I think it's extremely helpful. The thing is that what it brings to mind to me is that, again, if you haven't already made the shift or aren't making the shift towards expanding beyond Google, then you're probably in trouble. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm thinking of is, you know, Aaron Wall called the alarm years and years ago, and everybody thought he was just kind of crazy because I just want to live on Google and I should be able to get my traffic. And he's just like, do not have the majority of everything invested into Google. And so the example I'd give of that would be, I have a blog that I'm doing that's health related, and I've had incredible success just going the Facebook route.
Right.
And actually just using the advertising and learning from the response of different types of content and making the call to action be the email. Because still today, as you know, email is one of the number one things that you should be doing in regards to just marketing repeat traffic and selling them, you know, other things. And so it's one of those things where I feel like there's only so much you can do on the SEO end. That should definitely be like a continuous thing, as in get your site set up correctly. Obviously, be doing the content marketing well. If you are more on the local side or the competitive side, where you can have the calls to action in their ecosystem, do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then the rest of your time should be spent focused where people are actually where they are and where they're having conversations. And yes, it's going to cost you money. I mean, that, as much as it hurts me as a pure SEO who likes SEO because he hates spending money on ads, that's kind of the whole point is to get the free traffic. If you are savvy about how you do your advertising, particularly on like Facebook, you can get a crap ton of qualified targeted emails. I mean, so I know that's a bit of a tangent from the mobile discussion, but I guess what I'm trying to express is just sort of like it really has become something where you can't just be doing this one thing and that's your only thing.
Yeah.
And as you already know, you know, Google changes, it seems like, every week.
Well, you can't be doing the one thing anywhere, because even like audience building, right? At the end of the day, there's so many different ways to pick up an audience, right? And whether your goal is to bring that audience into your newsletter or to build up your social followings or whatever it may be, there's, you have to try different things. And then, like you were saying earlier, when with, you know, the whole lean startup scenario, is really optimizing and focusing on what works.
What works and what doesn't, right?
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully it never happens, but if Google, they're never going to go away as a company, but your site may drop in their results, then having a plan B that's associated somehow with, if you're in-house, your role at the company, and if you're an agency, what you're being contracted to do, means, you, first of all, you're not going to get dropped along with the site. And secondly, you know, you do have, hopefully, not as much of a issue with drop-off of traffic / revenue that's based upon what your team's goals are.
So let's go back to speculating about the new mobile and slow labels. Your original question.
No, I love this. I love this.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you think they're up to? I mean, what do these labels mean? I mean, where are they? You know, where is it coming from? What a weird thing to put slow on the result and it be a top result.
Android sales are not up there with iPhone, but they're still pretty strong. And Google has made a pretty large effort to get Google Now out there amongst iPhone users and Chrome amongst iPhone users. So I think at the end of the day, this is really a data processing thing on their side. I mean, it's Panda to the nth degree. Like with Panda, it's a question of them having to index the web and then serve it. But now you're talking about trying to do that on multiple devices, and also devices where the application that's serving is also owned by the same company that's indexing and serving the results. And in some cases, almost half of the cases, the device that the person is using is owned by that company as well. So if Panda was a question of addressing efficiency from an indexing and serving in the SERPs perspective, we're really talking about a scenario where this is Panda in terms of the Internet of Things, where, you know, Google is in the device market, you know, Android-powered phones and phones made by Google, and soon to be possibly cars made by Google, and other Chromebooks and everything else made by Google do have to run efficiently for them to be able to make money and generate income. And now they're also getting into more into the utility space, because they've been into the utility space for a long time with solar power and things like that. But with Google actually talking about launching a mobile data provider, right, to go up against Verizon and AT&T, especially with, you know, today's news of, you know, net neutrality passing through the FCC, that really opens up the door for Google to expand their data serving and make sure that they're not wasting money serving things that they don't need to. Because also with the net neutrality thing, Google's probably the only company that would be in that provider market that does have a say of what kind of data gets served and what the size of that data is.
So, you know, you brought up efficiency several times and Google Now. And, you know, efficiency is really about one answer. Efficiency is about it telling you or you asking and having the answer. What does that mean to the existing SERPs, and what does that mean about having multiple results and labeling things as slow? And what does that mean? I guess it's funny because
good point, John.
Well, it's sort of like if I am on my phone and I do a search and I still get the more inefficient results, which right. is multiple results, and I see a label that says slow, they're setting up that result to fail, I mean, yeah. I don't even understand the experiment. I mean, it's basically we're ranking you really high because of all the other factors.
Well, they're setting that up with mobile friendly as well. Like if you're on your phone and you're searching and you see that, say, for example, I'm searching in the EDU space or for car insurance or I'm searching for payday loans or something that's very mobile oriented and they're labeling what is mobile friendly. They're basically telling me what I'm going to enjoy looking at, what I should be looking at, what I should not be.
And the ones that are biasing it. Yeah. I mean, they're adding bias to it. Yeah. I mean, they're influencing what you're going to click and not click.
Right.
And so why would you show it? So why wouldn't you not show all mobile? And why would you ever show a slow site?
But at least it's a warning, though, right? I mean, at least they're putting out the information beforehand with the labeling.
Who wants to visit a slow site?
I do. I do it all the time.
So, you're like, I got time.
Hey, I used to do that all the time.
I love watching a site. Dial up and minute or two. I love it. I mean, mm-hmm. It lets me talk to other human beings during that minute.
Yeah. Well, every time I'm on a flight that's supposed to have Wi-Fi, that's my experience right there, right? It's trying to load something and it's extremely slow. But I hear you. So it's more clicks, it's influencing click-through, and then it's going to be, hey, well, click-through is a ranking factor because more people are clicking on sites that are labeled fast or mobile-friendly than slow and not mobile-friendly.
The only thing I can think of is that they would consider that if people continue to or click on even more so than the other links that say, you know, when they click on something that says slow, they're like, well, even though it's slow, this is the right answer.
What if it's slow and it's a huge brand, right? Like what if it's Hilton Hotels? Hilton Hotels, for the mobile, their experience is not great, but TripAdvisor is a great experience for the mobile, right? So I'm looking for a hotel in Nashville, right, to come see you. You can stop by Jack White's studio.
Wait, is this happening? Is this happening right now?
I'd love to. Okay. Maybe. So I'm looking for hotels and I see that TripAdvisor is fast and Hilton slow, but I also know with Hilton, I can put in my honors information right there and just book it. So that would be one scenario where there is a consumer loyalty, right? As being part of like, it's slow, but I'll put up with it type thing.
Right. And my guess though, you know, with that is that then that would tell Google to keep that highly ranked.
Yeah.
Even though it's slow, in this particular case, it's still the best
result
for it's still relevant to that user. And so, but I would imagine then that assuming there are better alternatives, like maybe TripAdvisor or Expedia or something is a better alternative and it's faster and it lets you book the same way, that if that were the case, then, you know, they're absolutely going to fall off.
Well, read this. Starting today, we will begin to use information from indexed apps as a factor in ranking for signed-in users who have the app installed.
So more personalization.
Yeah. So if I have Bleacher Report TeamStream installed on my phone, will Bleacher Report rank higher, right, in the results for me from a personalization standpoint on my phone? And there's also like the big trend that Apple, and I'm not an Android user by any means, but I'm sure across Google devices, you do have apps that are multi-device that you can access all over the board. It probably means that I'm going to start seeing more Candy Crush type things appear in the SERPs.
Because I always read the Candy Crush blog.
Yeah, CandyCrush.com.
How we addicted you today.
/ car insurance leads, CandyCrush.com/whatever. But, you know, that's kind of interesting.
Because, that's very interesting because I've always, no cussing, so I've always poo-pooed on the idea that mobile apps would ever take over anything, you know, in regards to nobody's going to use the web anymore, at least the web, the way we know it. And so that, you know, I talked about earlier, you know, how like, man, you really got to diversify what you already know about, you know, into Facebook and everything else. Well, now what that basically says is I need to make as part of my strategy for my site and my content, my brand, I should consider some sort of, I need to start pushing an app on them that provides some value add
through Google Play, that might cost money,
and iOS,
or it could be monetized.
I'd want to make an Android app and an iOS app.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm not sure I even need to monetize it. I just need to give them a good reason to install it.
It is monetization at the end of the day, right? If more people are coming to the site based upon,
I can get their email
content from the app. Yeah,
yeah. But I'm saying that you're going to get the most people installing that app if there's some sort of value add that they don't get from the website itself, and if it's free at least up front. That's how, I mean, that's how you're going to get that. Cause you want to get it on as many devices as possible. And then only after that, then you would try to monetize from that, whether it be in app ads or, and, or, you know, some sort of conversion.
I'd probably say about 20 to 30% of the transactional websites that I go to right now when I'm on my phone, the first call to action before even seeing what I'm looking for from a story perspective is the call to action to download the app and that interstitial, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's consistent with what they're saying right there of what you need to be doing.
We just
now in this podcast added one more thing we have to do.
Oh my God. We got to deploy everything. So another thing too, is that like I'm currently working on a redesign, right, for a client, and this is a client in the EDU space, and they do get the bulk of their traffic from mobile. So what we've done with the redesign is we've taken a mobile first direction, because if only 30 to 35% of the people that are searching for them or finding their site are doing it via the desktop, then why even build a site for the desktop, right? Mm-hmm. It's more so, let's build it for mobile first, and then let's expand it to the desktop. And the responsive experience when you're on the mobile is kind of similar, but it's not 100% similar. So there's little things that you can do when designing, like, you know, the call to action, the actually call via a tracking number is at the very top. Forms at the very top, because they want to get leads at the end of the day. So, you know, now I'm thinking from a sales perspective or even from a client management perspective, if having an app for their lead base, right, if they're putting out content, they're putting out things for their students or whatever, is going to help them from an SEO perspective, then that's the next thing I want to look at. And I also want to make sure that they're not doing any, pulling any boneheaded decisions and putting out apps that just don't make sense.
Yeah.
As well.
Well, you know, here's one of the greatest things, I think, to come from a mobile-first approach, and that is a good user experience.
Yeah.
Because you are limited in space, and at the end of the day, it's generally content or a product you're trying to show and sell or get somebody to read, meaning to pull them in.
Yeah.
It has ushered in much better experience for that person to even consume that content. And what I mean by that is I can't say what the site is. It's a very big site, but it's somebody I know personally. And she was in charge of a major overhaul of this very large site. And
Pornhub, she, Pornhub, right? That's
what you're saying. Yeah, totally. so close.
I've noticed that experience changing my phone recently.
and so she did a ton of architectural things, you know, layout, back end, that type of thing. One of the things she did, though, was made it, you know, it was a mobile first approach to the overall design. And part of that was sort of that one column experience, that top down, how you consume data instead of just being distracted all over the place and people bouncing out, that type of thing. When that change went live, within the first 2 weeks, the traffic actually just skyrocketed, and it's actually only been 2 weeks since they relaunched it, and it skyrocketed. But their ranking also jumped from, you know, terms that were like 7 are now 2. Mm-hmm. Is across the board. I mean, it's insane. But all of those things are directly related to what we even started this conversation off about, which was secure, mobile, and fast.
Yeah,
and then because of the mobile, it is an unavoidable user experience improvement.
Adapt or die, right? I mean,
yeah,
it really is. And even if people are finding your site, and if it's marked fast and mobile friendly, or if Google didn't have that and they're finding it, they're going to drop off anyway. If you can't find what you're looking for in at least one or two scrolls of the thumb, then it's back button immediately. And you know, even like you know, Google rolled out the more carousel experiments on the mobile last week as well, which is kind of interesting because they're getting the user to not just swipe up and down anymore, to get used to swiping left and right. And unless you're an avid Tinder user, you're not necessarily used to swiping left and right as much on the mobile.
My joke about that is I used Tinder once until I found my wife.
Oh,
I was like, oh God, at least we like each other. I'm just kidding. I've never actually used Tinder.
There's an app called Get Lettuce where it's Tinder for meals and restaurants. So you just swipe left what is it? Left if you don't like it, right? I'm going to act like I don't know. Left if you don't like it, right if you do, type thing, mm-hmm. right? So they are kind of addressing that in the mobile experience as well. And I'm wondering if that's something that sites will have to look into when they're building out to not only optimize for user experience for the folks that are used to making those quick decisions from mm-hmm. maybe even a navigational perspective, right? Yeah. But like, I mean, I'm totally off on a tangent here, but that's the whole like monetization model of answers.com now, which has turned into a total trash site. And it's all like listicles of like, you know, the worst celebrity beach bodies ever. But after each of those little images that you see of like Jack Nicholson on the beach in his mankini, where there's supposed to be an arrow to swipe to look at the next part of the gallery, right. there's typically right. an AdWords ad with a big arrow, right?
Let's go on that tangent because that just immediately pisses me off.
I mean, it's so misleading.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And it looks like the arrow you're supposed to push. And what I don't understand is that's completely against
everything.
AdSense policies.
That they put out there. Yeah.
People off of their accounts permanently because of misleading like that.
And I used to do that all the time.
They're enabling, but now they're enabling to do that. What is that all about?
I know. They're enabling themselves, right?
It's because they need money. At the end of the day, they need money.
It's almost like YouTube's break even. And apparently, I think the earnings came out or something came out today where they say that they're, at the end of the day, YouTube is break even. And this announcement is about 5 days afterwards. YouTube has now banned influencers from running their own pre-rolls or running sponsored HTML overlays on their videos, right? And bypassing Google.
Which again, as a user, I'm fine with because I think it's crap. But
You don't want to see two pre-rolls before you're just like, video starts anyway.
Right.
But it does remind me of the issues that they traditionally had with like guest and sponsored blogging, for example, online. So it is kind of funny how they do break their own rules a lot of the time. So
they used to be so hardcore on something, and then In fact, I had a little experience with that with scraping.
Let's get into that on another call.
Another
podcast. So being that this is called Search and Deploy, like I said, from a format perspective, and this is our inaugural show, and I'll probably massage this format a little bit afterwards, but what are some tips that you would give to SEOs and site owners to deploy tactics to address some of these changes?
Well, as it relates to mobile, one of the things, you know, we already talked about it a little bit, but approaching it mobile first. And that means that you should really consider using some sort of like foundation, some sort of existing structure to help you get started. So I said foundation because it reminded me of
Foundation Digital.
Well, yeah, it's a good one. It reminded me of Zurb Foundation, which is a framework. That was actually what I was going for. Find mm-hmm. a framework. Zurb Foundation is a mobile first framework, kind of like Bootstrap 3 has become, and that's where I'd actually begin. You know, it's kind of hard to just go, okay, I'm going to write mobile first and tweak everything from scratch to begin with. You're going to waste a lot of time. Instead, use a really good framework. Like Zurbs, which is free. And I've had a lot of success building out sites and then converting them into a WordPress theme and that type of thing.
What I'm also getting from this too is that, you know, especially with apps becoming a component, the app experience and app personalization, is that you can't just continue to add layer upon layer of user experience on something that's not fixed, right? And that's always been the answer up to this time with a lot of sites and projects is like, hey, we need mobile. Okay, let's do an m.app, right? And make that part of the site experience. Hey, we need an app. Okay, let's hire this app company. Well, it looks kind of different and it has a different content than we have on the site. That's okay because that's the app experience, right?
I definitely think it's cart before the horse to be doing an app before a site. If your main...
Or differently.
Obviously it always comes back to what is your business case? What is it you're trying to do? Right. But in our case, we're mainly talking about sites that are e-commerce or they're publishers and of content. And so in that case, you need to take care of the core things first, which is having that mobile first approach, making sure that you're doing all of the core things right. So to me, all the core things are having a good CDN, you know, content delivery network, making sure that you're not on a crappy hosting provider, making sure that you're using structured data where it makes sense to, you know, with your particular strategy, you know, get all the things that need to work well right first. So that to me is, you know, speed and mobile. And then from there, it is what else do we need to fulfill in the overall strategy? So from the, you know, beyond a content strategy and beyond even, you know, even link building, you know, throw it out there. Even, you know, that's going to be, I would do all those other things before I would even think about doing an app for Android or an app for iOS or whatever, even though we kind of brought that up. Like, yeah, you know what? That should be part of your long-term strategy, but do the fundamentals first. And the only big difference here, you know, particularly as it, you know, has to do with this conversation, is that things now also need to be fast, although you can make an argument they always need to be fast. And things now need to be mobile friendly. And if you just address those things, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Right. Gotcha. So. Yeah, it's the foundation or it's the core, right? If you build on top of the foundation and the foundation is not solid and sound, you're going to have a weak structure. If your core, and I kind of think of these things as like the nucleus and then like all the little whatever's orbiting around that. Protons orbiting around that. So like your apps are basically something that's orbiting around the nucleus. It brings people in.
Yes.
Your whatever you're doing that's outside of your nucleus is almost like a satellite that then brings people in. It brings in your audience, it brings in your visitors, it brings in whatever. And you own that, whether it's your social profiles that are out there orbiting around or whether it's the app or whatever. It's whatever way you connect with that user, and then the question is, if your core is rotten, you're not going to have any success at the end of the
day. Right. Yeah. Your site is the core for most people. You know, for the type of sites that we work on and the type of clients you work with, your site is the core, and that's your primary focus, and everything else becomes that secondary thing around it, which usually can be many more things than that core. And then I would even throw out that, you know, depending on your strategy, then the app is tertiary. You know, I mean, it's like, and now that we have the time and the resources and we have an audience and that type of thing, let's create an app that is free to download, that has some sort of value add that they can't get from the site itself, which is why they would want to install it to begin with. And that just adds to the overall visibility strategy for your site or for your service in that case.
Well, on that note, thanks a lot, John, for making the first podcast
thanks for
here for Search and Deploy. It's been great talking to you and going through everything. So it's John Henshaw from Raven Tools. John Henshaw from Raven Tools. And we're going to be producing this in about a week. Woo-hoo.